I just texted Brian, and I'll text Eli.
Okay, great. I'm sure they didn't forget.
No, they definitely didn't.
This is just too damn important.
Yeah, that's why I left early. I left class early just to be here.
We see your priorities, Taylor.
Of course.
You prioritize lab over your classes. That's great.
No, I prioritize time management, and my classes went over 5 minutes. So.
There you go. So you're sending Jill a subtle message to end on time.
I don't even think she knew I was there. Like, the remote, the hybrid class is so hard. Like,
yeah.
I participated, but yeah, it's, I feel like, I don't know, Eli, can you attest to this, that like the hybrid class feels like the people in person are the class. Like, we, it doesn't really matter if I'm doing this and like trying to participate. I'm just not seen or heard.
That's, yeah, for the most part.
That's interesting. Yeah, because
it's not a Dr. Rathis thing. Trust, I'm not saying it. It's just a really hard situation.
I was in that situation last year. This year, the entire class is in person, which is great. But last year, I had part of the class online and part of the class in person. And the way I handled it was I treated everybody as if they were online. So the in-person students had to bring their laptops and log in and Zoom in. And I taught to my laptop. And the students...
That's so smart.
Yeah, and the students in person had to respond. I would not call on them unless they were raising their hand in Zoom. And so I treated everyone as if they were remote, even though there were people in class. And it worked okay. I mean, the worst part is wearing a mask and teaching for 2.5 hours. But other than that, you know, it's not that bad.
Yeah, Dr. Rathis did suggest your idea, and I don't think anyone really followed through with it.
Well, it sounds like the remote students need to have more power, more leverage. You guys need to speak up.
Any opinions there, Brian?
When I was teaching hybrid, I did the same thing. Everyone was on Zoom. I think I acknowledged the people in person when they weren't on Zoom, but it's very weird to me not having everyone see each other, or at least being able to connect with each other. But that's just me.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, welcome everybody to our second, actually our third lab of the semester. And I sent out, as promised, the reliabilities. Let me share my screen. So these are everybody's ratings. So there are 13 of us. It's so great. 13 lab members, including a few undergrads or recently graduated, namely Teresa, Rachel, and Elisa, who's joining us in a little while. She gets out at 4:50, and so she of her class, and so she's on her way. But we have a large group, and what I did was I provided you the ratings of the gold standard. These are the ratings that were furnished to me by the creators of this coding system. So they coded the 10 vignettes that you all rated for today, and I included those in my database, just entered them, and then here's everyone else's ratings. So as if you've been with me before, you know I like to talk about the ratings and talk about the ones that are kind of off. So does that make sense to everybody? Everybody get my attachment? Everybody should have a copy of this PDF. Is that true or false? I see thumbs up. That's very good. All right. So in my email message, I sent out the ratings. It's not meant to embarrass anybody, but to let you know where you fall in the range of ratings. And I tip my cap to Myrav, who had the highest reliability. So kudos to you, Myrav. Have you done coding before? Why? She's going to say she's a certified scores coder.
Not like her.
Where are you? Is Myrav there?
I think she said not like that, but I also think she froze.
Oh, she's frozen. Okay. There she is. Oh, yes.
Sorry, just having a little bit of trouble, but I could hear you now. I haven't done coding before.
Yeah, I was wondering whether you were a ringer, like not maybe like you're this, a maybe. Certified scores coder.
No,
okay. All right. Just checking.
Are you related to Dr. Goodman in any way?
I fed her the answer sheet ahead of time.
I knew it.
So anyway, that's just to give people a sense. And actually, anybody who got over 0.7 did fine. Okay, so... those of you who didn't, you know, we'll keep working at getting you there as we go along. We're gonna do this exact same thing for the eight dimensions of this system. There are eight dimensions, scoring dimensions of scores, and complexity is of object representations is the first one. So you've completed the first dimension. Hopefully. That was meaningful to you to score them on your own. We're going to review the 10 vignettes and see what people thought of them, and then with the remaining time, I'll talk a little bit about the second dimension, which is affective quality of representations. And I believe you read the blurb for affective quality representations for today. At the end of that document will be 10 more vignettes, different ones from the one you did obviously today. Please code those 10 for next week. Send me your ratings the night before Wednesday night, and I will do the same thing as I did this. You guys hear me? Okay. And I will do the same thing that I did this past week. I will calculate your inter-rater reliabilities with the gold standard ratings, send those to you along with everybody's ratings, and you can see how you did. Okay? That's the organization for the next 8 or so weeks. So you'll, for those of you who know all about Q-sorting, we're going to have a reprieve from Q-sorting for the next 8 weeks or so. And then we'll get into Q-sorting. So that would take us into probably beginning of December, end of November, beginning of December. We'll try to tie everything together, all eight dimensions, and you'll be coding them all at the same time with the Q-sort technique. So that's the goal anyway. And between now and the beginning of December, end of November, this is what we're going to be doing every week as we master this coding system. All right, so I will once again share my screen. Oh, and one other thing I want to mention, and that is that if you've been with me before, you know that when we review people's ratings, anything that's 2 or less from the gold standard is fine. In this particular coding system, though, anything outside 1 is kind of an outlier. So take, for example, vignette number 1. The score is 7. So anything under 6 would be something we need to talk about. or let's say a rating of 3. So a 3, a 4, or a 2 would be acceptable, but anything outside that range, you know, we need to look at, it would be an outlier. Does that make sense? All right, so the first vignette, and I will read it. Okay, just to refresh your memory. The woman is a performer, maybe singer or actress or something. I could see there's a poster about her, whatever she's in the background. She's an up-and-coming star, and this is her first break. The guy is her long-term significant other from her hometown, and he's visiting the city where she's now to support her on her big opening night. He realizes how different it is in the city and starts to realize it's a very different lifestyle. He's uncomfortable with it, whereas she's very excited and hoping he would be more excited for her. But she understands he's homesick and is making a sacrifice moving to the city. I think they're both, it's a very big change for both of them to see each other again. And so they're both pretty emotional. She performs and it's great, and he's very happy for her. Afterward, they talk and hug and all that stuff. And he moves to the city with her, not really knowing what he'll do. But she is appreciative and aware of how difficult this is for him, despite knowing he loves her and she loves him. Let's just say the rest of the story is that they struggle adjusting to make it in the city, and they do all right. So at the bottom of the page, or actually maybe in the very first page, there are the anchor points, the 7 anchor points, and you had to select the anchor point that best represents this story, this vignette. Actually, only 4 of the 7 anchor points are explicitly defined, but the even numbered anchor points are between scores of the anchor points that are listed here. So the authors of this coding system placed or coded this vignette as a 7, which is the highest coding possible. 7 is psychologically minded, insight into self and others, differentiated, and shows considerable complexity. So we have Mel at 6, Brian at 7, Taylor at 5, which is a little low, Eli 5, which is a little low, Jeremy 6, Lexi 6, Searle 5, which is a little low, Myra 5, which is a little low, Andy 6, Mindy 3, which is quite low. Alicia 6, Teresa 4, which is low, and Rachel 6, that's fine. So who wants to talk about their thinking about this vignette? Who wants to start? Brian, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. I thought it was very detailed and multiple perspectives. So with that combination of, you know, a lot of detail about these communication patterns and understandings and thoughts and the multiple perspectives, that's why I gave it a 7.
All right, very good. Mel has something to say.
At first, I didn't think, like, I wasn't sure it was the best of the best to earn a 7, but I'm looking at the outline that I have now for it, and it did include that description for all main characters described. So I see it now, so, like, I'll try to, I think, like, we should read kind of the information that it shares on it and not go by what I did, which was, like, is this the best version of writing? So that's why I didn't score it a 7 at first, if that makes sense.
Right. Now, keep in mind for everybody that these are all oral narratives. These were probably audio recorded. This first example is probably a TAT card. I don't know off the top of my head which one it is, but it's probably a TAT card. So the administrator is showing the individual a card and saying, tell me a story with a beginning, a middle, and an ending, and tell me what the characters are feeling and thinking. And that's all the instruction they get. And then they start talking. So when we write, you know, we're able to edit, you know, backspace, delete, replace words, change sentence structure around. But when people are talking, they don't talk like novelists. And so we're going to see, you know, incomplete sentences, you know, maybe run-on sentences. That shouldn't detract from your overall score, though. In fact, I would try to block that out, the quality of the so-called writing, because it's not really writing, it's the quality of the talking or speaking. So that's a good point, Mel, to keep in mind the scoring criteria rather than the quality of the writing. Now, eventually, when we switch to the real sample, it's going to be, as you all know, psychotherapy transcripts. And once again, of course, that's oral. The child will be talking, and you're going to be coding the child's object relations based on what they say. And of course, children speak in a lot of incomplete sentences. So it's important that you keep that in mind as you go along. Anybody else want to contribute to the conversation? Mindy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that I rated the three, which is extremely, extremely low, but I think that's what confused me a little bit. It was about like the choppiness of what it was. So I think that was where my mistake was, that I focused more on that rather than like the actual like content and like the seven anchors and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's easy to focus on the quality of writing. And if a person speaks very eloquently, you might be more likely to assume that their quality of object relations is going to be high. But those are two, what I would call, orthogonal constructs. You know, quality of writing is completely separate from quality of object relations. And we're coding quality of object relations, not quality of writing. And as I said, most of these are not going to be very eloquent because they're just people speaking into a microphone, essentially.
Dr. Goodman?
Yes, Taylor.
So I have all the TAT cards. Can I just put a few in the chat so people can understand?
Yeah, sure. Like you can hold them up or whatever.
Well, I have them on in a PDF.
Oh, okay. Do you know which one this is, by the way?
I don't, because I don't really remember all of them. But if I were to scroll through it, I might look for like a performer, and I could maybe figure it out.
No, it's okay. I just was curious if you knew which, because I was trying to think about, you know, which one this might be, and it didn't immediately come to mind.
It didn't for me either. I never thought of a performer.
I know most of the cards by memory, but this description doesn't match any of the cards in my mind right now.
Yeah, I think I just sent it. But there's definitely one with like the violin, like the boy with the violin. That one obviously, I mean, not obviously, but for me, it clicks automatically. So I don't know if you guys can see it.
Yeah, we can.
All right, awesome. Some are turned the wrong way, but this just to give you an idea of what the child or patient or interviewee is looking at and their response.
Oh, now is this every single one of them?
I'm not 100% sure. I think we got this in a psych.
It might be because you got 29 cards. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just scrolling through them real quickly. I mean, it could be card 6, possibly.
I don't know if these are labeled, by the way.
And for everybody who's looking at these cards, these are classic. They've been around since, some of them have been around since, I think, the 1930s. Henry Murray, when he first started using the TAT, he was a professor at Harvard. And I'm just scrolling through them. Some of my favorites.
Yeah, sorry to detract, but just to give
people... No, that's all right. I was curious, too.
Yeah.
It's nice that you have these on PDF. You made these yourself or?
Absolutely not. I think Sarah Kramer sent them to our class.
Oh, okay.
Brian, do you have them?
I have them somewhere. I know Dr. Calderon teaches the TAT, so.
Yeah.
I mean, this might be all of them.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, thank you for sharing that. I actually downloaded them myself. But I'm still not absolutely sure which card this vignette is referencing. But anyway, let's go on to the next one. The next one has a rating of 1, the lowest. So let me read that. How many of these are there? These are scary. Oh man, these are scary. In the beginning, the sun came out and all the farmers came to the farm. The mom, I don't want to look at it. It's scary. It's really scary. And then the sun came out. The mother came out to watch. The daughter went to school. This is a creepy photo. Creepy? Just that this is black and white and it looks weird. Like, not proportional. It's not a photograph. It's too realistic. It's like a painting. It is a painting. It's too lifelike. Are we done? What happened at the end? In the end, the sun went down and they all went back home and slept. Oh man, I am so scared right now. What about? Just like my past, the lost opportunities. I know I shouldn't dwell on that, but I am scared of being alone, that in the end, I'll end up alone. Now, you could just ignore most of it and you read the last sentence and it's all about this person. Right? I'm scared of being alone. In the end, I'll end up alone. The picture has nothing to do with the viewers being alone or not being alone, but he or she makes it all about him or her. So it's a very egocentric response. And then it's kind of confusing what's going on in the picture. It's not a photograph, it's too realistic. Well, what does that mean? You know, so there's a lot of confusion going on in the vignette. So that's why I got a 1. So Mel gave it a 2, Brian a 1, Taylor 2, Eli 3. 3 is too high. Jeremy 1, Lexi 1, Cyril 1, Myra 1, Andy 1, and Mindy 1. Great. So everybody's pretty much in agreement. Eli, do you see why it should be a little lower?
If you could explain it again, that would be very helpful.
Sure.
I'm a little confused.
Okay. In the very end, I'm so scared right now. Just like my past, the lost opportunities. I know I shouldn't dwell on that, but I am scared of being alone. That in the end, I'll end up alone. So the picture ends up being about the interviewee. So if you look at the anchor points, 1 is egocentric. That means self-centered. Sometimes confuses thoughts, feelings, or attributes of the self in others.
I understand. Okay, so if it is, I just want to read the egocentric. Okay.
Sure.
Now, I'm unable to see that point of view. Okay, they're unable to see. Okay, got it. Now, does that mean that anytime the individual is not able to see the other person's view and they make it about themselves, that it's always a 1? Or does it?
I mean, pretty much if it's all about the person and not really about the picture, it would be a 1.
Okay. Okay, then that makes a lot of sense.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure. So we go to vignette 3, and that scored a 3. So Eli, in this next one, it is a 3. So you can get a sense of the difference between a 3 and a 1. So this one's a 3, and Mel had it at 4, Brian at 2, Taylor at 3, Eli at 3, Jeremy at 2, Lexi at 3, Cyril at 3, Myra at 4, Andy at 2, Mindy at 3. So everybody was within 1, which is great. Excellent.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I think I'm having trouble discerning the difference between the middle categories, like between 3 and 6.
3 and 6. Okay.
It seems like the differences are much more nuanced than they are between 1 and 7.
So 3 would be a situation where the descriptions of the people are very minimal. They're very behavioral. There's no discussion of internal states of, you know, of mind. So no mental mm-hmm. states are referred to. And also you would also expect to see the person splitting the characters into all good or all bad categories. Whereas in a 6, the descriptions are more integrated. So there's good and bad in everyone.
Got it. So now, like, what would be the difference between 3 and 2?
A 3 and 2 is just a matter of degree. So a 2 is a category that you would use if they didn't quite make a 3, or if their responses were a little bit better than a 1.
Got it. Okay. I understand. So I guess that's where I'm getting confused, is it seems like between 2 and 5, it's just about degrees. It's very easy to, you know, to figure out where to place the extreme cases.
The extreme cases would be in 1 or 7. The 5 is kind of the default. 5 would be a default rating. Representations of the self and others are stereotypical or conventional, able to integrate both good and bad characteristics of self and others, but has awareness of impact on others. Right. That's kind of like the default. They might even say that in here earlier.
Right. Okay, I guess with practice, we'll get better at it.
Yeah, I am hoping. Yeah, one way to think of a score of a 4 is the middle ground between a 3 and a 5. That is, descriptions of people's personalities are present, but not to the point where they integrate both positive and negative characteristics of self and other. I mean, what I would suggest, Eli, is going back to the document that I emailed you and just rereading the description mm-hmm. of the dimension.
Yeah.
All right. Brian, did you want to add anything to that?
No, not really. I think that this is a good example of egocentric, but I think you explained that pretty well.
Okay. So because everybody was within 1 of the third vignette, I think we'll just skip to 4. Because I see a lot of variation here with vignette 4. So the correct answer is 6. And Mel gave it a 6. Brian gave it a 1, which is way off.
Yeah, I think I was ahead of my explanations, but you can keep going.
Okay. Taylor was a 4. That's a little low. Eli's 5. That's fine. Jeremy was 4. That's a little low. Lexi, 4, that's a little low. Searle, 4, that's a little low. Myra, 6, is fine. Andy, 5, is fine. Mindy, 2, is low. So, so Brian and Mindy were on the low end of things. I forgot. Rachel raised her hand, and that reminded me that I'm not scrolling down far enough.
I also gave it a 1. And
yes.
I don't know, Brian, okay. You were thinking the same thing, but I was really focusing on the egocentrism.
Yeah, I read the description. That's why I put it as a 1, too. I think me and Rachel were thinking similarly.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's...
Okay, it was very long and detailed, but he was talking all about himself and how the way he felt about his, I think it was his mom... and then she died, and he felt relief, and he was talking so much about himself. So that's why I gave it a 1.
Okay, so let me read what the book says about this particular answer, because this is the first one where we really there's a lot of discrepancy among the raters. In this example, there's considerable complexity regarding the son's conflictual relationship and views he has toward his mother. For these reasons, this begins in the 6-7 range. However, there is no perspective taking on the mother's point of view or the role in which he's playing in the interactions. As such, this is coded as a 6 as opposed to a 7.
So I'm understanding the difference between egocentric and that, especially when it comes to the TATs. Egocentric means that they literally can't like understand even the people on the card, versus this scenario where one of, you know, the people on the card was given all of these internal attributes and states.
Exactly. It's not about the, it's really learning the intricacies of the mind of the character. It's not about the person providing the description. In that first example, In the second example, it turns out to be about the interviewee, right? He's scared. He's not talking about the characters. He's talking about himself. He's scared. He's talking about scared of being alone, blah, blah, blah. He's not talking about the characters. He's talking about himself. In the vignette number 4, the person, the interviewee, is talking about the characters, not about himself. Does that make sense? I think there were some hands up.
I just have a clarifying question. So for a 6, it doesn't matter that, like, I rated it as a 4 because I saw, like, the, what they said, basically, like, that the mother really doesn't have as much of, like, of a understanding there. But for the 6, it only matters that one of the characters has that deep understanding.
Okay. Yes. So, and if they all had that level of understanding, you'd bump it up to a 7.
Okay.
But because only one of the characters was really, you know, scrutinized within that level of detail and complexity, you bump it down to a 6.
Okay. I had assumed that both of the characters had to be at the same level of understanding in order for it to be at a 6 or a 7.
At a 7, true, but not at a 6. A 6, that's what defines a 6, that not all the characters are equally complex.
Okay, thank you.
So if you go see a movie and some of the characters are really fleshed out and other characters are like one dimensional, the movie would get a 6. All right.
So Dr. Newman, I'll ask you this though.
What?
Neuro and Tomatoes rating is 1 out of 7.
Yeah, there it is. That's exactly it. Brian.
So how are we going to differentiate this when we're reading transcripts? Because, like, egocentric, since there are no characters, it's just people. If the child that we're going to code only thinks about his internal states, would that automatically be a 1? Or if he has really detailed internal states, we'd rank it higher.
Exactly. So I think a 1 in that case, when we're going to be rating psychotherapy transcripts, is a confusion of what's his feelings versus other people's feelings. You know, there's some fusion there, not able to differentiate his own feelings from other people's feelings.
Got it. So hypothetically, so we're treating this as if it was like almost a transcript. So because he has a lot of like internal thoughts and motivations, again, if this was a transcript, we'd rate it a 6. And really we're kind of staying away from that egocentric view when we're getting into the transcripts, if I'm understanding that right, since he is talking about himself?
I think so. Of course, you know, there's more than one person in the room. And so if the, I'm just making this up, if the therapist says, you know, like, you know, I'm not all there today because I have a headache or I'm not feeling well, and the patient just goes on a stream of consciousness about himself, that's kind of egocentric, even in that circumstance.
Right. Thank you.
I'm also thinking of, like, if there's a situation where they're talking about multiple people in the session, if they're able to understand the other points of view, maybe that would also get more of a 7 rather than a 1.
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely. All right. Let's go to number 5, vignette 5.
And also Mindy had her hand up.
Oh, sorry. Yes, Mindy.
I didn't realize, sorry, I left it on from before. I was going to say about the egocentric, and that's what got me confused, but now I understand it. So,
okay. Thank you. All right, no problem. So number 5 is rated a 2. And we've got Mel at 2, Brian at 2, Taylor at 2, Eli at 1, Jeremy at 2, Lexi at 2, Sorrel at 2, Myra at 3, Andy at 2, Mindy at 2, Elisa at 3, Teresa at 2, Rachel at 1. So I think everybody nailed that one. And given the fact that everybody nailed that one, let's move on. I want to cover the affective tone scale today. So, vignette 6 is fantastic, and that is rated a 7. Sorrel rated a 4, that's low. Myra made it rated 7, great. Andy rated it 4, that's low. Mindy rated it 5, that's low. Elisa rated it 5, that's low. Teresa rated it 6. And Rachel rated it 5, that's low. So, oh wait, I'm sorry. I messed up. I was looking at Lexi's ratings. I meant to look at the gold standards rating. So scratch all that. The rating is 6. Mel had it at 7. Brian at 6. Taylor at 6. Eli at 6. Jeremy at 7. So that's all great. Lexi at 7. Searle at 4. That's low. Myra at 7. Andy at 4. That's low. And Mindy at 5, which is okay. So just Andy and Sorrel were a little low on this one. You guys want me to read what the book says about this one? This narrative has considerable complexity. However, the complexity takes place between Georgette and John. The reader is able to see that John is concerned about Georgette's well-being with regard to being pregnant and not exerting herself. He's concerned about their crops and survival, given that she needs to rest and care for their unborn baby. Likewise, Elaine is content and able to see that John cares about her, and at the same time, she's used to helping him. With regard to Georgette, the reader sees that she's jealous and on some level wishes she was marrying someone for love, but it doesn't go further than that. In sum, we're able to see people's personalities, awareness of impact on others, and integration of thoughts and feelings. There is perspective taking on the side of the couple, but not with Georgette. Georgette sees complexity in others, but has a harder time seeing it in herself. For these reasons, this is coded as a 6 and not a 7. So Georgette is not a very complex person, but she can see complexity in others. But because she can't see the complexity in herself, she gets docked a point, or the story gets docked a point. So now it's rated a 6 rather than a 7. So Sorrel and Andy, does that make sense?
I think just as Mel said, like in the beginning of this meeting, that I was looking at it more in terms of I wasn't doing it solely on content. I guess I was looking at the quality a little bit.
Okay.
In terms of like I thought it was like very one-sided on who it went in depth with. So that's why I rated it lower, but I see now.
Okay. All right.
And for me, yeah, I think I maybe had some unrealistic expectations about the depth of their interpretations.
Okay.
But I get it. I get the rationale.
Okay. All right, good. Let's go on to 7. Vignette 7 was rated a 5. So Mel placed it in 4, Brian 4, Taylor 5, Eli 4, Jeremy 4, Lexi 4, Sorrel 3, that's a little low, Myra 5, Andy 3, that's a little low, and Mindy 3, that's a little low. You guys are hard graders.
Now that you have another room.
Oh, yeah, right. Thank you. Elisa 5, Teresa 5, and Rachel 3, which is a little low. What do you guys think about that? Anything? In this example, there are personality descriptions of the male and female character. The female character is able to see the man in a more complex way with regard to the positive associations to his abrasive personality and how it can be beneficial to her in the context of a relationship. We also get a sense of how other people view both characters. However, there are a few nuances or complexities surrounding self-views. That is, we do not get a sense of how she views herself, and we do not get a sense of his experience of her. So while there is some integration of good and bad characteristics of self and others, and how people are seen, right, there is less of an indication that there is considerable insight in psychological mindedness, which would be a 7. As such, this is rated as a 5. If there was more differentiation between characters, less of a focus on how other people are perceived, and more of an appreciation and understanding of how thoughts and feelings about the self and others influence and impact each other, then this would be rated higher. People understand that? All right. We go to number 8, rated a 4. Mel put it in 4, Brian in 3, Taylor in 3, Eli in 2, that's a little low. Jeremy in 5, Lexi in 3, Sorrel in 3, Myra in 4, Andy in 2, that's a little low. Mindy in 2, that's a little low. Elisa 4, Teresa 4, and Rachel 4. So you first years have a very punitive superego. You grade hard. We got to loosen you up a little bit. I can read the rationale for the 4 rating. In this example, there's discussion of inner conflict. Internal states are not minimal, and at the same time, the nature of his conflict is vague. That is, the reader is able to identify that he is ambivalent about whether to stay in the dark, the familiar, or try something different, which on some level he finds could be beneficial. However, this is not very developed. At the same time, his internal state regarding his inner struggle is not minimalistic, which would have been a 3. As such, he receives a rating of 4, which is in between a 3 and a 5. Any questions or comments about that? Nope, everybody understand? All right. Let's look at number 9. Number 9 got a rating of 3. Mel had it in 2, Brian in 2, Taylor 2, Eli 2, Jeremy 2. Wow. You guys all rated a little bit low, but within normal limits. Lexi 2, Sorrel 2, Myra 3, she nailed it. Andy 2, Mindy 2, Elisa 3, nailed it. Teresa 3, nailed it. Rachel 2. So you guys did fine on that one. I think generally, though, you guys rated it a little bit low. This is another example of a minimalistic narrative. The internal state mentioned includes dreaming and peaceful. Beyond that, there is little detail regarding his inner experience. For these reasons, this is coded as a 3. So not much detail, but not tending toward, you know, confusion and egocentricity. So it got a 3. I could see why you certainly gave it a 2. All right, and the last one is a 1. And we've got Mel at 3, too high. Brian at 3, too high. Taylor at 2, Eli at 2, Jeremy at 3, that's too high. Lexi at 3, too high. Sorrel at 1, Myrav at 1. Here's where your hard grading comes in handy. Myrav 1, Andy 1, Mindy 2, Elisa 4, Teresa 4, that's a little high. Rachel 3, that's a little high. So what makes this a 1? Let's read. This is an example where there is confusion regarding thoughts, feelings, or attributes of the self and others. Specifically, a woman interacts with a man who is blind and then fuses with him and begins behaving like his service dog as well as sexual partner. There's little differentiation between self and other. The motivation of the woman is literally to service him. While internal states are mentioned, boundary fusion trumps this. For these reasons, this is coded as a 1. So I wonder whether some of you rated a little bit higher because of the internal states that were mentioned. The problem with this one is, where does the person end and the other one begin? It's confusing. It's not really clear. And that's why it gets bumped down to a 1. This boundary fusion is a very clear indicator that the quality of object relations is extremely poor. Mindy.
If you could just explain the real difference between a 1 and a 2, because I think I get those also a little bit. I don't know, like, when to bump it up a little bit, and then when I got confused a little bit with those internal thoughts, so that's why I gave it a 2, but I wasn't, like,
yeah. So I think if there wasn't the boundary fusion, like, is she the dog? She seems to be the dog. She's not the dog. If that weren't in the vignette, it would definitely be a 2. Because it's so minimal. You know, there's an allusion to a mental state like falls in love, for example. He's blind secretly. The idea that there's something secret to be withheld, that suggests some complexity, but the boundary fusion just wipes all of that rationale away. You see boundary fusion, it's automatically a 1. All right?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So just to piggyback, so anything that can fall into like the 1 category, like the fusion or the confusion or anything like that, or also the egocentrism, that's going to automatically make it a 1 no matter
yes.
the internal.
Correct. They trump everything else.
Okay. I think that's what was confusing me.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. So those are the vignettes. I hope that that has been instructive. Mindy, is your hand up or is it, you have another question?
Oh, sorry. I keep forgetting.
Oh, that's all right. It's all right.
I apologize.
Oh, no problem. So I hope that that was instructive, and I think I sent you the answers. So if you like, after lab today or tomorrow, whenever, if you want to review again, your answers with the book's answers and then read the rationales for each, you can certainly do that. So I also, I sent you last week the chapter for affective tone, and we're going to talk about that right now. And then I also sent you today, I sent you the chapter for emotional investment in relationships, which is what we're going to be talking about next week. All right. But for today, just want to talk about affective tone. So last week when we were talking about complexity of representations of people, someone asked me about, you know, feelings. How do we rate feelings? And I said, you know, we'll be rating feelings in another dimension. And this is the dimension, this affective quality representation. So it's a dimension that, unlike, I think, every other one, every other dimension, it's not considered a developmental construct. What do I mean by that? So let's take the one you just learned, complexity of representations of people. As a child gets older and grows up, research suggests that their representations of people become more complex, more integrated, good and bad characteristics come together, and more differentiated, so distinguishing one person from another. This happens as part of maturity. Now, of course, people who have psychopathology are going to have lower complexity, more like that of someone who's younger. But for this particular dimension, affective quality or affective tone, it is not developmentally sensitive. So you could have a positive affective tone at age 3, just as positive an affective tone at age 3 as you could at age 83. It depends on your point of view, how positive or negative your affective tone is. Similarly, in these vignettes that you're going to be rating, or in the psychotherapy transcripts later on, you are going to read the vignettes for the quality of the affect of the characters. So, is it a malevolent tone? Is it a benevolent tone? That's the kind of thing we're picking up with this dimension. So you got to kind of put away your complexity of representations of people toolkit, and then we're pulling on a different toolkit called affective quality of representations. And so you're going to be, it's like learning a different coding system, but it's just a second, it's the second of the 8 dimensions of this massive coding system. So we're learning the second one. And so it's not on a developmental continuum. So it doesn't really matter how old the person is or how mature they are. It has more to do with the affective tone of the story. So if the story or the vignette or the narrative has a general positive tone or a happy ending, it's going to have a higher score than if the story or narrative has a negative ending or a sad ending or an abusive ending. So if you look at if you open up the document that I sent you from last week and you look at the bottom of the page, I'll just read the anchor points. So so it's what the person expects from relationships and how he or she tends to experience significant others and describe significant relationships. Obviously with emotion words, right? One is malevolent, abusive, caustic. 2 would not be, I'm just going to kind of fill in the blanks here. 2 would be not abuse, not actual abuse occurring, but threats of abuse. Verbal abuse would count. That would be a 2. 3 is largely negative or unpleasant, but not abusive. 4 is, again, a negative tone, but not terribly unpleasant. 5 would be mixed, neither primarily positive nor primarily negative. So you have to have some positive to be scored a five. All right, there has to be something positive. Six would be closer to more positive than negative. And seven is generally positive expectations of relationships, but not Pollyannish. If it's Pollyannish, meaning that if it's just too syrupy sweet, the story, then you're gonna rate it low, even though it sounds positive. I know that sounds a little bit confusing, but for those of you in the second, third, or fourth year class, looking at you, Taylor, what would that defense mechanism be called?
I'm just letting you know that I was reading like the examples, so I did space out for a second.
If the narrative is very Pollyannish and everybody gets along and everybody is singing Kumbaya, what would that be a defense mechanism of? What would be the name of that defense mechanism be?
It could be some sort of denial or...
More specific. I know you learned it in Danielle's class. I know that was a while ago, though.
Yeah.
Or Brian, Eli?
I'm going with denial.
Oh, Sorrel. Sorrel, the first year student, nails it. Nice job. It's reaction formation.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if it's reaction formation, right, if it's syrupy sweet, then you're going to want to consider a lower rating. So just keep that in mind. But overall, a seven would be a very favorable and affirmative view of the relationships. And where affective quality is absent, bland, or limited, let's say there is no affective quality, it automatically gets a four. So just right off the bat, it's automatically four. Oh, Sorrel's gunning for a lab coordinator. Is that what you're suggesting, Jeremy?
No, I just meant like his spot as a third year cohort member.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Andy has her hand up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it said, like I have in my notes, that the fairy tale ending would be automatically rated a four. Do you agree? Is that what you want?
I don't know. This is on page 57. Bob and Susie went on their first date to the movies and fell in love. They always treated each other with perfect kindness and lived happily ever after. This would be rated as a four. If the fairy tale nature of this narrative was less overt, slightly more realistic and less movie romantic comedy like rom-com, then it would be rated as a five. So it gets bumped down. Even though everything's positive, it's not realistic. And so you can't possibly give it a score in the range of five to seven because of the Pollyannish quality. Obviously, the person is employing reaction formation to the story. So does that make sense? Any questions about that?
I have a question, but I was just thinking about this dimension and how, like, coding it, they probably don't take into consideration, like, a very recent trauma. And, like, let's just say the child's or the individual's, like, mother just died and they're just feeling really, really angry, and then they respond to TAT cards and they're just, like, really down in the dumps and they're responding to everything with, like, a 1, 2, and 3 kind of affect quality of representation, and obviously that's something that we can't really control for. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I think this dimension might be more sensitive to recent life events than other dimensions. Yeah. I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know, even if this person gets a score of a 2 or 3, because they had a recent traumatic event. So they're looking at the world through black colored glasses rather than rose colored glasses. You know, they might get higher scores in the other seven dimensions. So their overall score on object relations might still be high, even though in this one dimension they might score low because of the recent life event. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to point out here regarding a score of 5. So the narrative is beginning to incorporate positive emotions. People are helpful, are seen in helpful and kind ways. Negative affect and experiences of others, though, are still present, even with a 5. And there are two ways that you can get a 5. If a negative event is described, but the outcome is positive, right? Or the narrative is described in a way where the positive outcome holds more weight than the painful experience affect, right? Does that make sense? And then the other way is that if there's truly an equality between unpleasant and pleasant experiences.
I have a question.
Yes.
Thinking about how we're going to be doing this for children, is it likely that we're going to see a lot of that, like, Pollyannish, like, concept? Like, I feel like a lot of children kind of have, like, an over-idealistic, like, almost...
Well, normal kids do, but without giving away too much about the subject that we're going to be studying, this person's in psychotherapy. So the person, by definition, has problems.
That makes more sense.
And I think Taylor is confirming that the kids she works with also. I mean, if a parents are referring your kid or referring their kid to therapy, one would think that they don't have the same kind of naive, idealistic view of the world as other more normal kids might have. So I don't think we're gonna encounter the Pollyannish too much, and mistake it for or mistake a child's natural idealism for an optimism for Pollyannish thinking.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments? How do you guys like this coding system so far?
It's a lot more straightforward.
You mean than the CPQ and the PQS?
Yes.
I love it.
Really? So it's easier?
No, not that necessarily it's easier. It just, it really gets us thinking about object relations in general and representation. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a whole school of psychodynamic thought. This is a whole class of psychotherapies that, you know, there's object relations theory and object relations based therapies. So people spend their whole lives in this kind of realm that we're studying right now. So it's really great if you have an interest in object relations theory and want to work with patients from an object relations point of view. I think this is excellent training in getting your mind to think that way. And Drew Weston, you know, being the genius that he is, he, you know, devised these 8 different ways or aspects on how to look at object relations. So as we go along, I think you're going to see how comprehensive the total construct is. But for now, you've just been exposed to the first 2 dimensions. So I think we're doing very well so far. So send me your ratings of the affective quality narrative or vignettes by Wednesday night. Make sure you you read the affective quality and even then read the emotional investment in relationships chapter that I also sent today. And Jeremy will win the next time. He's guaranteeing it. Oh, and Mel says, we'll see. I see. And already the Las Vegas bookies are already placing their bets, so this is great. Rachel asked you, no, you can send me a new Excel. That's fine. You don't have, if you wanted to add it, you can. It really doesn't matter. I just need the ratings. And I just want to remind everybody, when you send me your Excel, just enter the numbers. Don't put any writing. And when you send it to me, also make sure your name is in the file name. Because what I do is if I'm going through my email very quickly, I'll just download the attachments very quickly, and then I'll enter them into my database later on. But it gets confusing if the file name is not labeled. So thank you for that. So I'll let you guys go early, and I'll see you next week, and I'll see my first year students on Tuesday. All right? Bye. See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.